distance or are calling from a cell phone, please use our toll number, 1-559-733-5161. That's 1-559-733-5161.
Thank you.
Welcome back to American Exposé. Jared Wiggs sitting in for Chris Gerner tonight. Check out Chris's website, AmericanExpose.com. American is spelled with a K and not a C. We encourage you to do that and do your research. Find out if the stuff we're saying is true. There's plenty of documentation up there, and all of it comes from the sources. You can get it right from the horse's mouth, folks. And we have a caller, Michael from Bakersfield, California. Michael, welcome to the broadcast.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
Okay, I'm alone for a week, so kind of feeling like nothing to do. But my question was a couple minutes ago, well, not necessarily a question, just called to chat because you requested me to, because you don't really want to ramble on for 2 hours, and so I'm company for you. You were talking about the Berlin Wall and communism a second ago.
Uh-huh.
In a way, tearing down the Berlin Wall let communism out of a bag, say, like when it was confined to the half or that region. It was kind of restricted and you could see it, but once you turn down the wall, now it's everywhere and you can't see it.
Right.
Yeah, so that's cool. And also, your women in the draft, remember the incidents with people abusing people in the prison? I forget all the names, but it's blurry. And those horrible stories with that woman and some other people abusing some prisoners in this prison. And because all these people that they're trying to fill the army up with, because they're spreading themselves too thin, are not as well trained as the people that are there. That's their full-time commitment.
Right, that's a very good point, too, by the way.
Yeah.
When we have the all voluntary military, at least that's what they're telling us, of course, how voluntary is can it be when you've, you know, your tour of duty is up.
And you're forced to stay.
Your enlistment term is up, and you're forced to stay in, you know. But be that as it may, as you've so astutely pointed out, these are people who have been training for this for a long time. You know, and I don't know, this draft issue is something that really hits very close to home for me, because this war on terror is not going to be over anytime soon, you know. It's the perpetual war. It's a war that's going on forever, it seems like. They still have many theaters to engage upon. We're seeing the demonization of Saudi Arabia. The demonization of North Korea, well, of course, that situation has been brewing for a while. And then we have Taiwan. It seems like all these created crises have been orchestrated for us, and this is a situation where it seems to me like what our military is doing is going in all these countries around the world and overthrowing all the governments that are not going to cooperate with the New World Order. I don't know. What's your take on that?
Well, I don't know. The violence does any time there's ever been a war, at the end, you know, or I'll just go back for a second, you know, Spain and the conquistadors that came over from Spain and killed all the Mayans and Incans, I'm not sure if my names are right.
Mm-hmm.
The only way to get what they wanted was either to slaughter everyone who opposed them, and if they didn't slaughter everyone who opposed them, the people who were left were angry. I don't think violence is going to solve anything, but that's the only way the military knows how to deal with stuff.
Right.
And how you were saying, how about they let the government and the politicians be corrupted, mm-hmm. and now we're screwed somewhat because we'll have this army and they're trying to deal with it with violence, and what we have to do is go back in time and not let the politicians be corrupted.
Right, absolutely.
The USA is trying to control the world because the New World Order and the UN, but trying to control the world. If they didn't go destroy everyone that wouldn't agree with the United Nations and New World Order, it won't happen. So someone earlier, I'm listening to this all the time, said that the U.S. is just going to be a sacrifice and they'll be lost, and after the U.S. has done all the prep work, then the New World Order will be founded.
Mm-hmm.
But it's prophesied, so it's not like we can change anything, you know. It's going to happen.
Well, see, this is where I have a problem with oh, man. I just had this debate with my aunt and some friends of hers who came over the Memorial Day holiday. People say that it's in the Bible, and so it's inevitable. And I have a problem with that because I don't feel that evil is ever the plan of God. You know what I mean?
Right.
I believe that the reason it's inevitable, I mean, if nothing else, maybe it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
Because if people read that in there, and then they won't. It acts as kind of an agent of paralysis. You know, they don't do anything about what's going on. I believe that that if enough people woke up to what's going on, we could make a difference and we could stop this thing from going on. At the very least, we can slow it down.
Mm-hmm.
But yet you have churches today that don't tell their congregants the truth about what's going on. Communism is the most evil thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and yet...
It's people trying. It's the Garden of Eden, the whole thing. They want it to be equal with God, and in communism, everyone's equal. That's what they say. And you can't be equal with God, and that's what they're trying to sell. Or just equality doesn't work. You have to have officials, or not necessarily officials, but you have to submit to the authority of God somewhat. And communism, they don't want it. Everyone wants to be equal. I think that's what it's about. Am I wrong?
Well...
What I thought, Tom.
We have a ruling elite class, a ruling class that they want to be God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're wanting to play the part of God. I mean, we've seen with DARPA, which is...
Oh, Defense Advanced Research.
Yeah, they had something that they were working on called LifeLog, which would basically be a reading of every thought that you could ever have in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from cradle to grave... They would know everything that you've ever thought of. I mean, if a person was raped, they would be able to pull the tape, so to speak, and actually see the rapist in action. I mean, this is...
Scary stuff.
It is scary stuff, but this is seems like more and more what we're seeing today. And I see this stuff coming down the pike, and I see, man, these people just... They want to be God. They want to play that part.
And are you done? I got
yes.
Another thing to say about DARPA. They found it with the help of tons of other universities. They came up with TCP/IP, which is a networking protocol for computers or the internet. But also, I was reading about this project called the Tempest, or you know, everything has electrical charge, or electromagnetic charge in it. You got your electrons and protons, and everything is positive or negative. And they were upset about encryption, so they were trying to get around encryption by just reading the electrical charge of all the data that moves around everywhere. They just want to know everything and control everything. So God, yeah.
That's right.
You're saying we can slow it down. We just gotta heighten awareness.
That's absolutely right. You have any ideas on how we can do that?
commercials? No, I don't know. But then you're appealing to the dumbed down. But it's hard because we have this dumbed down nation you were talking about. They don't even understand it. You try to explain it to them, and they're like, "Well, I don't get it."
Yeah, they kind of look at you like you have a second nose, don't they?
And they think you're crazy, and it's like, no, you're the one who's crazy. Like. You're ignoring your freedom being taken away.
Yeah, yeah. What kind of priority do they... I mean, here's the thing.
They're complacent. They want everything to be easy and love and nice and let's just get along.
Yeah, convenient. It's all about convenience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it's easy.
The thing that kills me is that Americans do a lot for their children. You know, they buy their children cars. They pay for their children to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
They do everything they can in most cases. I mean, there are exceptions. But they do a lot of things to prepare the children for life. But the most important aspect of life, your individual liberties, which are irreplaceable and sometimes almost impossible to reclaim once you lose them. They don't educate their children about liberties, and they don't do anything to try to preserve those liberties themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but the parents are not aware. They're just buying into the secular material world is all that matters. The parents aren't aware that what were you saying exactly? Liberty. Define liberty. Definitions are good because then you know. Because one person could think it means one thing and the other person can think it means something else. So can you give me your definition of liberty, please?
Well, very simply, I define liberty as freedom. Your individual freedom.
To do whatever
freedom
you want.
Freedom to choose to do whatever you want as long as you don't encroach upon the freedom or liberty of somebody else.
And but the thing is, it's hard because interaction... At the heart of interaction, it's hard to have completely non-walking on someone else's rights interaction because, I don't know, human nature, they try to control people. It's like, or not necessarily human nature, but people try to control each other, and I just don't know why, and they just do.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with greed.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, with these ruling elite, I think a lot of it has to do with their religion, too. I mean, we know that they are atheists, but at the same time, they have their occult beliefs.
Well, I'm not sure. Well, atheism, basically, I don't think you're either with God or against God. So you can't. Atheists, they're Satanists, but they're just calling themselves atheists. Because if you're not worshiping God, you're worshiping Satan. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they're saying atheists because they don't... If you hear the word Satanist, that sounds bad, or I've been told that's not right. But if you're not with God, you're against Him. So,
right?
Yeah, the
absolutely.
Atheists and the Bilderberger group and all the Illuminati stuff, and it goes back to like Egypt, but all the weird people that are in control. So,
absolutely. Well, it sounds like you're aware of what's going on in the world, and hopefully.
Try to change.
You're able to make a difference along with the rest of us because, basically we're in the same sinking ship, so to speak. And
mm-hmm.
It's difficult to talk about this stuff without sounding depressing, you know. And then that's the other obstacle that we face is, waking people up while at the same time not being a drag, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's depressing.
Everything's depressing. It's like, I don't want to hear that. It's all bad. And people don't, and I was saying earlier, just people want it to be agreeable and, what's that word, I forget words, it's fine. There's a word for agreeable that starts with a G, I think. I don't remember. Anyway, yeah. So I have nothing else to say. You can talk or I'll hang up. And
Hey, I appreciate you calling in tonight. God bless you, and I hope everything... goes well in your part of the country. You're from California?
No, I'm from Canada, but my mom wanted to work as a nurse here for a year. She was like, yeah, completely randomly moved here for a year.
Oh, I see.
That's weird.
Yeah, I thought you were from Bakersfield.
I am. That's where I'm living now.
Oh, I see. Okay, I gotcha.
I'm more from Canada. I'm British Columbia. It was a...
How are you listening?
Drive. That was fun.
Are you listening on the internet?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it went out. I tried the real player, but I'm not sure. But Winamp just seems to work better.
Uh-huh.
Or it's more user-friendly, I suppose.
Right.
Okay.
Well, hey, I appreciate you calling in tonight.
Thank you.
And God bless you, and keep listening and keep trying to wake people up over there.
Okay.
All right, God bless.
Okay, bye-bye. Click.
All right, folks, if you want to call in, the call in number is 1-800-858-6582, 1-800-858-6582. This draft issue is something that I've lost sleep over, frankly. It's something that really deeply disturbs me. It's something that I can't imagine my daughters, who are right now 9 and 8, going to war anytime, and knowing the senselessness of this war. The purpose of this war is to implement a new world order, according to George Herbert Walker Bush, back in on September 11th of 2000. I'm sorry, September 11th of 1990. I'm trying to find it here, and I'm not having any kind of luck. But basically, he said that out of this crisis, our fifth objective of New World Order would emerge. And he talked about how this crisis in Iraq, the one that was, here it is, I've managed to locate it. He says, it was September 11th, 1990, he spoke before a joint session of Congress. And this was at the beginning of the Persian Gulf War, the first Gulf War, and he talked about how it was going to bring about a new world order. And he says, if you give me just a second here, our objectives in the Persian Gulf are clear. Our goal is defined and familiar. Iraq must withdraw from Kuwait immediately and without condition. Kuwait's legitimate government must be restored. The security and stability of the Persian Gulf must be assured. And American citizens abroad must be protected. These goals are not ours alone. They've been endorsed by the United Nations Security Council 5 times in as many weeks. Most countries share our concern for principle, and many have a stake in the stability of the Persian Gulf. This is not, as Saddam Hussein would have it, the United States against Iraq. It is Iraq against the world. I'm going to skip a paragraph. Well, hold on a second. Maybe I should just... As you know, he says, he continues, I've just returned from a very productive meeting with Soviet President Gorbachev. I am pleased that we are working together. He says, I am pleased that we are working together to build a new relationship. In Helsinki, our joint statement affirmed to the world our shared resolve to counter Iraq's threat to peace. Let me quote, we are united in the belief that Iraq's aggression must not be tolerated. No peaceful international order is possible if no peaceful international order. Remember, the word peace, their definition of peace is complete absence of opposition to their plan for world domination. Don't forget that. No peaceful international order is possible if larger states can devour their smaller neighbors. Clearly, no longer can a dictator count on East-West confrontation to stymie concerted United Nations action against aggression. A new partnership of nations has begun. We stand today at a unique and extraordinary moment. The crisis in the Persian Gulf, as grave as it is, also offers a rare opportunity to move toward an historic period of cooperation. Out of these troubled times, our fifth objective, a new world order, can emerge. A new era, freer from the threat of terror, stronger in the pursuit of justice, and more secure in the quest for peace. An era in which the nations of the world, east and west, north and south, can prosper and live in harmony. 100 generations have searched for this elusive path to peace. I believe he's talking about generations of his clan, generations of his family. They've tried for 100 generations to implement this world order, folks, but it has eluded them. While 1,000 wars raged across the span of human endeavor, today that new world is struggling to be born. A world quite different from the one we've known. A world where the rule of law, there's your totalitarian police state, folks, The rule of law supplants the rule of the jungle. What's the rule of the jungle? I ask. Does anybody know what the rule of the jungle is? I'll tell you what I think it is. I think it's your individual freedom. It's national sovereignty, but it's also your individual freedom. See, in the rule of the jungle, the animals in the jungle, because they view us as cattle, they view us as animals. The animals are free to do whatever they want to in the jungle. But see, the rule of law is going to supplant the rule of the jungle in this world order that George Herbert Walker Bush is talking about. A world in which nations recognize the shared responsibility for freedom and justice. See, he gives, remember, they're changing the definition of freedom today. So he gives lip service to the word freedom, and justice can be defined any way you want it to define it. A world where the strong respect the rights of the weak. Now he says, this is the vision that I shared with President Gorbachev in Helsinki. He's sharing this vision for this wonderful world order, this wonderful system that's going to be quite different from the one we've known. He shared that with President Gorbachev. He and other leaders from Europe, the Gulf, and around the world understand that how we manage this crisis today could shape the future for generations to come. You better believe it. See, folks, when you start reading this stuff, when you start listening to what these people say, you'll find that they say exactly what they mean and mean exactly what they say. You just have to know how to read their words. He says, the test we face is great, and so are the stakes. This is the first assault on the new world. What new world? The new world that they're trying to create. The world that we seek, he says. The first test of our mettle. Had we not responded to this first provocation with clarity and purpose, if we do not continue to demonstrate our determination, whose determination? Do we have the determination for this new world? No, they do. If we don't continue to demonstrate our determination, it would be a signal to actual and potential despots around the world. America and the world must defend common vital interests, and we will. America and the world must support the rule of law, and we will. America and the world must stand up to aggression, and we will. And one thing more, in the pursuit of these goals, America will not be intimidated. And he continues to talk about Saddam Hussein, the UN Security Council resolutions that condemned Iraq's aggression. And folks, this is George Herbert Walker Bush, 41st President of the United States, on September 11th. How ironic is that? September 11th, 1990. In a speech that he is giving about how the Iraq crisis would bring about a new world order, a new world order, the vision of which he shared with Mikhail Gorbachev, a blatant, unrepented communist. And just in case, I got a couple quotes here from Mikhail Gorbachev. He says, this is a quote from Mikhail Gorbachev from Perestroika, New Thinking for Our Country and the World, 1988. He says, it's my conviction that the human race has entered a stage where we are all dependent on each other. Doesn't that sound familiar? No other country or nation should be regarded in total separation from another, let alone pitted against another. That's what our communist vocabulary calls internationalism, and it means promoting universal human values. Mikhail Gorbachev, Perestroika, New Thinking for Our Country and the World, 1988. Now, also, in the same publication, he says, I would like to be clearly understood. We, the Soviet people, are for socialism. We want more socialism and therefore more democracy. There you go. From Mikhail Gorbachev, he's saying socialism is the same thing as democracy. He continues, We will proceed toward better socialism rather than away from it. Well, gee, we're hearing all about democracy, like it's something great, something they're moving away from. It's being promoted as something that the United States is promoting around the world. Mikhail Gorbachev, we will proceed toward better socialism rather than away from it. We are saying this honestly, without trying to fool our own people or the world. Any hopes that we will begin to build a different non-socialist society and go over to the other camp are unrealistic and futile. Those in the West who expect us to give up socialism will be disappointed. Folks, do I need to continue here? He says, those who hope that we shall move away from the socialist path will be greatly disappointed. Every part of our program of perestroika, meaning restructuring, is fully based on the principle of more socialism and more democracy. Again, socialism and democracy go hand in hand. You're hearing this from the horse's mouth, folks, from Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev, who is now called former Soviet President Mikhail Gorbachev. Figure out why that is. But folks, this lie that communism is dead, which, as far as I can tell, started with the courting of Mikhail Gorbachev by Ronald Reagan, is something that has put the West to sleep. It's put the United States of America to sleep to the threat of communism. Now, you can argue whether or not that was the intention of Ronald Reagan, but this glamorization, this love fest for Ronald Reagan, I think is something that he was very good at speaking against communism. He's very good at talking about big government and the perils of big government, and yet during his administration, the United States was plunged into incredible debt. At any rate, this former Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev and George Herbert Walker Bush, they shared the same vision, according to George Bush. So how are we to believe that anything has changed? How are we to believe that communism is not being implemented when we've already read the Ten Planks of the Communist Manifesto and demonstrated how they've been implemented here in the United States? But again, we're preaching to the choir. It's important for folks to spread the word. It's important for you to record these broadcasts and leave the tapes in public restrooms, at the library, or anywhere place else that you can, so the word gets out. We got to take a break here, folks. We'll be back in a moment with the last half hour of American Exposé. The website, AmericanExpose.com, spelled with a K and not a C. We'll be back in a moment.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. What should the true Christian response to the homosexual marriage license debate be? It should be the same response that Christians should have had to marriage licensing in the first place. The very definition of a license demands that we not obtain one to marry. Black's Law Dictionary defines license as the permission by competent authority to do an act which, without such permission, would be illegal. We need to ask ourselves, why should it be illegal to marry without the state's permission? More importantly, why should we need the state's permission to participate in something which the Creator himself instituted? We do not need the state's permission to marry. What if you apply and the state says no? You must understand that the authority to license implies the power to prohibit. A license, by definition, confers a right to do something. The state cannot grant the right to marry because it is a God-given right. Should homosexuals have the right to obtain a marriage license? Let them grovel before their God, the state, for permission to do that which is unlawful in the eyes of the Creator. What should we do? Christian couples should not be marrying with state marriage licenses, nor should ministers require them. Some have said, if someone is married without a marriage license, then they won't really be married. Given the fact that states may soon legalize same-sex marriages, we need to ask ourselves, if a man and a man marry with a state marriage license, and a man and a woman marry without a state marriage license, who's really married? In reality, this contention that people are not really married unless they obtain a marriage license simply reveals how statist people are in their thinking. We need to think biblically. You should not be required to obtain a license from the state to marry any more than you need one to be a parent, which in some academic and legislative circles are currently pushing to be made law. But that is another topic. This free speech moment has been brought to you by FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Do you really believe the Pentagon and the U.S. military were taken by surprise on 9-1-1? If you do, please go down to your local bookstore and find two books written by best-selling suspense novelist Tom Clancy, Dead of Honor and Executive Orders. Both 1990s books tell of enemies who take fuel-laden jet planes and crash them into vital U.S. buildings. Clancy admits his helpers in ironing out the details of these novels were some of the top brass in the U.S. military. Friends, the U.S. Air Defense System uses satellite and radar to monitor the skies over our 50 American states constantly. And yet the military claims it went blind for almost an hour on 911? Careful researchers have concluded that 911 was phase one to manipulate American soldiers into the Middle East. And now big media clues are conditioning us for a second terror attack to trigger the attack on Iraq. For the full story, go to realnews247.com and click on 911 cover-up and email your contacts around the nation to go to realnews247.com.
Welcome back to American Exposé, the final half hour. I'm Darren Weeks, and Chris Gerner will be back with you tomorrow night live as the weather is not too harsh there where he's at in Oklahoma. The website, again, is AmericanExpose.com, www.AmericanExpose.com, spelled with a K and not a C. And go there and do your research. Excellent research site. And also another site that you can go and find out a lot of information is SweetLiberty.org, the site that I've worked with about 5 years now with Jackie Petru, as we are branching out and trying to make a difference. So we have people that we're trying to work together, folks, to make a difference in this country while we still have free speech, while we still have freedom to do so. The United States government, they gave us this tool called the Internet, and I believe that their motives, I don't think they gave it to us so that we could expose what they're doing, but whether they knew that would happen or not, maybe it was an oversight, I don't know, but the fact is we need to exploit this this loophole, this this area of freedom while we still have it, and so that's what we hope to do, is to shine the light of truth. And there are many people out there, there are many broadcasters out there, there are many people on the Internet who purport to do that, and yet you can't trust them. They're not what they say they are, and we found that out recently with certain individuals that Linda Kennedy has exposed. So we try to do the best that we can with the Internet and with this network here, First Amendment Radio, and we thank God for the opportunity. This past week, I started to tell you there's a lot of things that happened this past week, and one of those things was, and maybe some of you out there heard about this, June 4th, 2004, the Associated Press reports about the an armed man in a bulldozer goes on rampage. Oh, man.
Chrysler shop owner, reportedly angry at local government, over a zoning dispute, tore through town Friday in an armored bulldozer, smashing buildings and firing shots as police tried to stop the slow-motion rampage. Authorities tried blasting their way into the steel-plated cab of the machine with explosives late Friday, but two explosions failed to penetrate the makeshift armor. Grand County Emergency Management Director Jim Hollihan said, one explosion could be heard at least a mile away. Hollihan would not say whether authorities knew the condition of the bulldozer driver, identified by the town manager as Marvin Heemeyer. The slow-motion rampage left a trail of splintered structures in this mountain tourist town outside of Rocky Mountain National Park, but there were no reports of injuries. The driver was armed with a .50-caliber weapon, but it appeared he had deliberately avoided injuring anyone. Isn't that interesting? That leads me to believe that the guy wasn't nuts. He was just mad. At least 40 sheriff's deputies, state patrol officers, and federal park and forest rangers fired about 200 rounds at the yellow bulldozer as it crept through town, Hollihan said. The shots were deflected by heavy metal plates over the cab, hood, and radiator, apparently welded on over a period of weeks in the driver's muffler shop. Here's a guy that owned a muffler shop, and first of all, I guess there were a couple of issues. He had some kind of objection to some kind of cement plant or something being built right near his muffler shop. And apparently this thing was going to be something that was going to be detrimental to his business somehow. So he protested it, and they said no to him, and then he took it to court, and the judge ruled in favor of the cement shop or whatever it was. And a completely separate issue from that, I guess they were saying that he needed to do some improvements to his business, which they say he didn't do. And they fined him $2,500. I guess, okay, it says that right here. Rod Moore, speaking by phone from his auto garage and towing company, says, it looks like a futuristic tank. He said the bulldozer rumbled past within 15 feet of his shop with an officer perched on top, firing shots into the top. At one point, he said the officer dropped some kind of explosives down the exhaust pipe. He just kept shooting, Moore said. The dozer was still going. It didn't do a thing. By late afternoon, the bulldozer had come to a stop, stuck in the rubble of a metal warehouse. Officers clambered on top, apparently trying to talk to Heemeyer. Hours later, officers still surrounded the bulldozer, and there had been no sign of movement inside, Lurline Curran, Grand County manager, said. Heemeyer was angry after losing a zoning dispute over land near his muffler shop, town manager Tom Hale said. He also had been fined $2,500 in a separate case for not having a septic tank and other city code violations at his business, Hale said. When he paid the fine, he enclosed a note with his check saying, "Cowards, we felt he was venting his frustration and he didn't get his way." That he didn't get his way, Hale said in a note of the note. We didn't think he was going to do something like this. The only thing I can say is they say you can't fight City Hall. Well, this guy didn't buy into that. Governor Bill Owens traveled to Granby Friday night to assess the damage. Authorities with the Grand County Sheriff's Office and town police did not return calls seeking comment. The state patrol said all roads in and out of the town 50 miles west of Denver were closed. Gunfire was just ringing out everywhere, said Sandra Tucker, who saw the bulldozer begin the rampage from her office on Main Street. It sounded to me like an automatic rifle firing about every second. Curran, the county manager, said at least some of the wrecked buildings belonged to people involved in one or both of the disputes. He evidently proceeded in destroying the properties of people involved with that, Curran said. She said that she had heard the man spent 2 months fortifying the bulldozer in his shop. Ian Doherty, a bakery shop owner, said the driver was upset a concrete plant had been built too close to his business. the driver had already headed, went out of his way not to harm anyone. State Patrol Major Jim Wolfenbarger said officers told him that the driver had aimed his weapon at propane tanks. The bulldozer also knocked out natural gas service to City Hall and the cement plant, damaging a truck and part of a utility service center, XL Energy spokesman Mark Stutz said. Granby is a town of about 2,200 at nearly 8,000 feet. It is near the Winter Park Ski Resort and not far from the edge of Rocky Mountain National Park. The scene was reminiscent of a 1998 rampage in Alma, another town in the Colorado Rockies. Authorities said Tom Leisk shot a man to death, then used a town-owned front-end loader to heavily damage the post office, fire department, water department, and town hall. So there you have it. Situation where a man, knowing he can't do anything about the oppressive situation with the zoning, knowing that he can't use his land the way he, as a supposedly a private landowner, is supposed to be, he takes the law into his own hands. And folks, I gotta say, when I see something like this, you know, I just get the feeling there's going to be more instances of this kind of thing as people become more frustrated with more and more ordinances and zoning. And again, that goes back to the Communist Manifesto and the Ten Planks. You have the situation with Agenda 21. It's not surprising to me to see why the spooks who control our government want to take away your firearms. Because here is a man with a bulldozer. He welds half-inch steel plates, two half-inch steel plates with a layer of concrete in between the plates to reinforce so that all the bullets that they shoot at him will be deflected. And he's unstoppable. And he goes and takes out a wall of the local library. He does damage to City Hall. And he was just angry because of their oppressive local government. And I'm not saying that everybody should do this. But I don't know. The whole situation ended up with him being dead, they said, of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. I'll let you decide. I mean, I got another situation here. Here locally, where I'm at, this was reported in the Jackson Citizen Patriot, March 7, 2004, where a guy is driven out of business. He's driven out of business by the local animal control officers. And for what? He did nothing wrong. In fact, he was vindicated. They admitted he did nothing wrong. But they kept him tied up fighting this thing, and he spent so much money on attorney fees that he ended up having to sell he was in the pig business. He had to sell all of his pigs in order to pay all the legal bills that he encountered. And you see stories like this, and yet people still believe, they're under the illusion that they're living in a free country. This guy's quote, talking about the animal control officers, he says they are arrogant, ignorant, and illiterate. His name is Randy Lashbrook. One of his pigs escaped on May 7th, setting in motion a local enforcement action that eventually drove him out of business. He said, I had to sell my breeding stock to cover legal expenses, and now I have no pigs. The livestock at large citation grew into 75 misdemeanor counts related to animal abuse. State inspectors gave Lashbrook a good report, and prosecutors dropped all charges recently. But Lashbrook is out of the swine business. He developed contempt for Jackson County animal control officers. He says they are arrogant, ignorant, and illiterate. points out the gulf between rural and urban life and perceptions about animal welfare. In a world of pampered pets, castration, mass graves, dehorning, debeaking, branding, and slaughtering are all foreign and repulsive to the average citizen. Michigan's Right to Farm Act does not sanction animal abuse, but it does provide a buffer for farmers based on acceptable practices. Unlike pets, most farm animals are destined for food. The line is not so clear-cut, however, and some farmers have found themselves in the unpleasant role of alleged animal abusers lumped in with those who beat dogs or starve cats. Lashbrook's legal troubles began when a pig escaped his East South Street farm and a neighbor chased it home. And, of course, he had some concerned citizen call 911. As animal control officers searched the farm and saw some dead pigs and muddy pens, this person cited Lashbrook with failure to provide adequate care and proper burial and livestock at large, all misdemeanors. She didn't like it because my pigs were in the mud, and she wanted me to move them. Well, folks, that's what pigs do. They wallow in the mud. Oh, it rained 4.27 inches in May, and there were flood warnings along the Grand River. Kimberly Luth, director of animal control, said the officer has a picture of the pig jumping back into its pen, which was a giant mud bog. There was no way for the slop to run off, and it created an unsafe situation for the pigs, Luth said. Lashbrook, she said, did not cooperate with the initial investigation. Lashbrook leveled his own complaint. The officers did not observe biosecurity procedures, such as disinfecting footwear before entering his farm, a standard practice by veterinarians and state and federal employees. He said they came in like they owned the place. Defense attorney Alfred Bratt, citing the Right to Farm Act, sought and won dismissal after 9 months. Lashbrook's pigs should never have been a county matter, he said. Animal control is meant for the golden lab that lives in the living room and not for farm animals, Bratt said. Is the county going to start policing every farm? No, said Chief Assistant Prosecutor David Lady. Farm animal abuse cases are rare, and the Lashbrook saga isn't apt to be repeated. Prosecutors and animal control officers will continue to use their discretion. Well, that's the problem. Apparently, their discretion isn't working too well. Lady said, that was my statement, by the way. He said they'd continue to use discretion. We surely do not plan to step in and tell farmers what to do. Luce said her agency rarely writes summonses to farmers and tries to work with farmers and the Department of Agriculture to improve unsafe conditions. Well, at any rate, they drove this guy out of business, and it's really a sad situation. The situation that we see going on in America today. Folks, we have a few minutes left if you want to call in. 1-800-858-6582. 1-800-858-6582. I covered this Banker's Manifesto last time that I was on the broadcast with Sam called in. I found it interesting because this Banker's Manifesto leads right into something called the Omaha Platform. What you got to understand, and most of you, I think, do, is that our country's monetary system is a fraud. It's controlled by private international bankers who operate for their own profit. And this is why presidents can never really have they don't really have control of the economy. Anytime they tell you they do, they're lying, because it's the bankers that control the economy. The bankers can make or break a presidency. And that's why I say about Reagan, if he wasn't doing what they wanted him to do, he wouldn't have been there for very long. Anyway, this control went back, and you got to understand, in the 1870s, there was a depression, and it was going on called the Long Depression. And I don't know if any of you have ever heard of the Long Depression, but I've only heard of the Great Depression. But there was a depression that went on from the 1870s on up through the 1890s, I think 1897, was when the country started pulling out of that. And during this depression, this manifesto, which was revealed by Congressman Charles A. Lindbergh, senior to the U.S. Congress, sometime in the early 1900s during his term. This manifesto is certainly something that I think needs attention of everyone involved in the freedom movement. It says, this is the Bankers Manifesto of 1892. It says, "We, the bankers, must proceed with caution and guard every move made, for the lower order of people are already showing signs of restless commotion. Prudence will therefore show a policy of apparently yielding to the popular will, until our plans are so far consummated that we can declare our designs without fear of any organized resistance. Organizations in the United States should be carefully watched by our trusted men, and we must take immediate steps to control these organizations in our interest or disrupt them. At the coming Omaha Convention to be held July 4, 1892, our men must attend and direct its movement, or else there will be set on foot such antagonism to our designs as may require force to overcome. This, at the present time, would be premature. We are not yet ready for such a crisis. Capital must protect itself in every possible manner through combination, that word means conspiracy, and legislation. The courts must be called to our aid. Debts must be collected, bonds and mortgages foreclosed as rapidly as possible. When through the process of law the common people have lost their homes, they will be more tractable and easily governed through the influence of the strong arm of the government applied to a central power of imperial wealth under the control of the leading financiers. People without homes will not quarrel with their leaders. History repeats itself in regular cycles. This truth is well known among our people, our principal men, who are engaged in forming an imperialism of the world. While they are doing this, the people must be kept in a state of political antagonism. The question of tariff reform must be urged through the organization known as the Democratic Party, and the question of protection with the reciprocity must be forced to view through the Republican Party. By thus dividing voters, we can get them to expend their energies in fighting over questions of no importance to us, except as teachers to the common herd. Thus, by discreet actions, we can secure all that has been so generously planned and successfully accomplished." Now, this thing was shortened and re-released in 1934 during the Great Depression, and it simply says, "Capital must protect itself in every way, through combination and through legislation. Debts must be collected and loans and mortgages foreclosed as soon as possible. When through a process of law, the common people have lost their homes, they will be more tractable and more easily governed by the strong arm of the law applied by the central power of wealth under control of leading financiers. People without homes will not quarrel with their leaders. This is well known among our principal men now engaged in forming an imperialism of capital to govern the world." Interesting change of words from the previous version. "By dividing the people, we can get them to expend their energies in fighting over questions of no importance to us, except as teachers of the common herd. Thus, by discreet action, we can secure for ourselves what has been generally planned and successfully accomplished." That's the Bankers Manifesto of 1892 and the subsequent Bankers Manifesto of 1934. Now, interesting thing about this manifesto, that they were talking about the Omaha Convention. Out of this Omaha Convention, I did some research on that, and I discovered that there was an Omaha platform which took place on July 4th, 1892. Excuse me. It's the People's Party National Platform. And they start off describing some things that were happening during that time, some problems that were going on in the country. And it starts off sounding like something that we could have written, those of us who are in the Patriot Movement, who care about freedom. They say, assembled upon this 116th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, the People's Party of America, in their first national convention, invoking upon their action the blessing of Almighty God, puts forth in the name and on behalf of the people of this country the following preamble and declaration of principles. Here's the preamble. The conditions upon which surround us best justify out cooperation. We meet in the midst of a nation brought to the verge of moral, political, and material ruin. Again, folks, 1892. Corruption dominates the ballot box, the legislatures, the Congress, and touches even the ermine of the bench. The people are demoralized. Most of the states have been compelled to isolate the voters at the polling places to prevent universal intimidation and bribery. The newspapers are largely subsidized or muzzled. Public opinion is silenced. Business prostrated. Homes covered with mortgages. Labor impoverished. And the land concentrating in the hands of the capitalists. Now, there's a red flag for you. The urban workmen are denied the right to organize for self-protection. Imported, pauperized labor beats down their wages. A hireling standing army, unrecognized by our laws, is established to shoot them down, and they are rapidly degenerating into European conditions. The fruits of the toil of millions are boldly stolen to build up the fortunes for a few, unprecedented in the history of mankind, and the possessors of these in turn despise the republic and endanger liberty. See, they called it a republic back then. They knew what form of government they had. From the same prolific womb of governmental injustice, we breed the two great classes, tramps and millionaires. The national power to create money is appropriated to enrich bondholders. A vast public debt, payable in legal tender currency, has been funded into gold-bearing bonds, thereby adding millions to the burdens of the people. Silver, which has been accepted as coin since the dawn of history, has been demonetized to add to the purchasing power of gold by decreasing the value of all forms of property as well as human labor and the supply of currency. The value of all forms of property as well as human labor. Isn't that interesting? Human labor is property. Does that tell you where these people are really coming from? See, you're seeing the influence of the bankers here in this document, as they said they wanted to control the proceedings. You'll see that even more, but we're running out of time here. And the supply of currency is purposely abridged to fatten users, bankrupt enterprise, and enslave industry. A vast conspiracy against mankind has been organized on two continents, and it is rapidly taking possession of the world. If not met, overthrown at once, it forebodes terrible social convulsions, the destruction of civilization, or the establishment of an absolute despotism. At any rate, down further, they place their demands, and they talk about, we demand free and unlimited coinage of silver and gold at the present legal ratio. Number two, we demand that the amount of circulating medium speedily increased to not less than $50 per capita. And number three, we demand a graduated income tax. Folks, we're out of time. I probably should have started this earlier. I'll post this on the website, AmericanExpose.com, so you can read it for yourself. Very interesting research to see the manipulation that was going on, even in 1892. We're out of time. God bless you, and do something good to preserve freedom.
If you can hear my voice, you are listening to the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network.